Next case this morning is case number 4, U.S. Bank versus CV Joint Ventures.
May it please the court. My name is Tom Peterson, and it is my privilege to represent the appellant, U.S. Bank.
Did you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I would, Your Honor. Please, 3 minutes.
You may have 3 minutes.
CB argued, and apparently the Superior Court agreed, that for some disputes there just is no remedy. Well, that may be true in some cases. It would seem to me that if there's one type of dispute that for centuries the courts of U.S. and England have handled quite well, it's disputes over the ownership of real estate.
How do you deal with the line of cases, though, that talks about this power of a tax deed in destroying an interest in some cases? What is U.S. Bank seeking to? Are they really seeking to completely dislodge CVJ and say it's not your property?
This comes up as a 12B6 motion, and so it's reviewed on the complaint. The allegation in the complaint is to quiet title in U.S. Bank to the house and, as it's worded in the complaint, the land underneath it.
So you're not seeking to quiet title in the entire parcel C?
This, we haven't gotten very far because this was a 12B6 motion. It would be certainly an equitable remedy that would be palatable if the court were to provide essentially quiet title to the house and the land underneath it in U.S. Bank, which is a typical kind of quiet title remedy. And that might leave some land for CV Ventures, although the way it is pled in the complaint, it seeks quiet title to the entirety of Parcel C.
And well, that's what you're asking for. That's not necessarily what will happen.
Correct. I mean, we are at a 12B6 stage. That is the way it was pled.
Is there some dispute about whether you're actually at, whether you are or are not asking for the tax deed to be set aside?
In the way the complaint is pled, that was not specifically pled that the tax deed be set aside. And again, this comes up on a 12B6 motion. The remedy that we are seeking in the complaint, as it is pled, is to quiet title in U.S. Bank to the Parcel C because the taxes were paid on the house. And there's no dispute that the taxes were paid on the house. The assessor assessed all of the value of the house.
So is it your position that encompassed within a quiet title action could be the setting aside of the tax deed?
Yes. I mean, we filed a complaint. There certainly would be the opportunity for the other party to file counterclaims and seek other relief. But it would be implicit that if title is quieted entirely to all of Parcel C in U.S. Bank, that it would divest title.
That would necessarily involve?
It would necessarily involve divesting title in CV Joint Ventures. And in the complaint, there was an actual pleading that they would be compensated for the amount that CV paid for the property. That would be one equitable remedy. Certainly has been recognized by a whole host of cases generally in the adverse possession boundary line dispute area of law, where courts have found that where there is an encroachment, the encroachment may remain, but the courts in their equitable powers have the ability and have done that multiple times to compensate the party that loses title.
So there's a third party that's still in the case, is that right?
Correct.
And that's who?
North American Title. And there's actually a fourth, Shelley, who was the original owner.
They're both still parties.
Correct.
And would be, if your case went forward as a quiet title action, they would be there.
That's correct.
What about the assessor or the county or whoever it is?
Well, the assessor was not named as a party. If we survive this appeal, that is certainly something I would look at as to whether the assessor actually should be a party to the case. The case was actually started by another law firm, and we picked it up.
For purposes of your argument, does it matter that the tax deed was obtained prior to the deed of trust foreclosure?
No. We seek reformation, and that action dates back to the original contract between the parties, which was the lender and the borrower who owned all of the property at that point in time. They made a mistake. It was a mutual mistake of fact. Again, there's ample authority in case law providing that in such situation the deed may be reformed. And then subsequent to that, a third party came in. They would possibly have a defense to reformation based upon being a bona fide purchaser without notice of this issue. So an issue that will have to be litigated is, are they a bona fide purchaser? We contend, and I think it's apparent on the face of the complaint, that they're not, because they purchased vacant land that was marketed and sold by the treasurer as vacant land, and they paid a price based on vacant land. Yet if you look at the property, there's an enormous house, mostly on Parcel C. So that would put them on inquiry notice, and we believe destroys their status as a bona fide purchaser. But if the case were to go on, there would be discovery. And one of the issues in discovery would be, well, what did you know about the history of this property and about the location of the house and so on? So we believe that, at least for purposes of 12b-6, we passed the test that it survives, that they're not a BFP and therefore do not have an objection to a successful objection to reformation.
What is the status of the house right now?
It is vacant.
It's vacant?
Mm-hmm. And it's been vacant for, I think, 6 years or something like that.
Who maintains it?
I believe that U.S. Bank maintains it, but I'm not sure about that, Your Honor. Counsel may have more information on that. So there are two cases that I would like the court to be very aware of. One is LEPCO, which is a decision by this division. Judge Spearman authored it, and it is a case that establishes two key facts, two key elements, or that is that there is precedent for reformation and there is precedent for, in the same action, a quiet title. And that is simply what we are seeking here, and also the Smith versus Henley case. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Martin Burns here on behalf of CV Joint Ventures. And I think there's three main points here before the court. One, it deals with, is there a quiet title action pending? I mean, this was a 12B6 motion. And we said that they failed to state a claim upon which relief could be granted. That's one issue. Second is reformation even available? They kind of tie together because that's more of a remedy than a cause of action. I'm saying there's no remedy in this situation. And then third, are there applicable statutes of limitation that would preclude the claim anyways? And we can derive all of this off of their pleadings, being it's a 12B6. But under the quiet title...
Let me ask you about the tax deed issue.
Sure.
The cases do say that payment of taxes is a defense to someone obtaining interest in a tax deed. Isn't there at least a basis to send the case back and figure out what taxes were paid and how?
No. And here's why. There is no dispute of fact that the taxes actually assessed against Parcel C, my client's parcel, were never paid. There is no dispute as to that. What they're saying is, well, the taxes were wrongfully allocated to Parcel B. Well, there's a remedy for that, and that's under the tax code, and you've got until June of the following year, June 30th, to appeal that. And if they come back now, it's a collateral attack on a tax that is barred by statute. So, no. You don't go back to that. There's also the Label versus Cleesby case that goes to the issue of the bona fide purchaser as well. But it also says that they bear the risk, the bank bears the risk, of a faulty legal description. Now, in reality, there's not a faulty legal description. It's Parcel A, Parcel B, Parcel C. There's not some of these cases with the meets and bounds are off by 20 feet or 60 feet. There's not that. This bank had their deed of trust in their own possession for 9 years prior to filing this. They let the property next to them go by tax sale, IRS tax sale, parcel A. They let our parcel go by tax sale for county taxes, state taxes. They had, then they file a notice of trustee sale. Then they get a trustee's deed. All of this time with the parcel B on there. So their error in not realizing the house is on their parcel is an error borne by them under the Label versus Cleasby case. And getting back to the bona fide purchaser thing, that case, and this is, I believe it's out of this court, yeah, it is out of this court, clearly says that no amount of good faith or bad faith matters in this. This is a tax sale. This is a tax deed. And they do hold a special status in the law. They are favorites of the law. And I cite the case of Kennedy versus Anderson that says you cannot invoke equity to reform a tax deed.
Unless well, you didn't pay, you know, they weren't, you just said, I think, they are not paying taxes, or you are not paying taxes on the house. You paid the taxes that were assessed against you, which didn't include the house, right?
Well, we bought at the tax sale, whatever the county asked for, we bid.
Okay, but really, who's paying taxes on the house?
Well, I guess for purposes of this argument today, let's say it's the bank on parcel B. However, that doesn't matter. If you look at Label versus Cleasby, again, it is a case that there was, well, we kind of thought we were paying taxes on the right property, and we thought we owned it, and we thought that this was all proper, and therefore we weren't on notice that the taxes weren't paid on this, and we lost it, and then, gee, we'd like it back. And this court said, no, you bear the risk that you don't know your legal description. They say that my clients, they want to do discovery as to did my clients know the house was on parcel C? They had the property for years. Why couldn't the bank go out there and take a look at it? Why are they pushing off? I mean, they want to talk fairness. They want to talk equity. The case law, by the way, does not say partial payment of taxes. It says fully paid. The taxes have to be fully paid on the parcel to invoke one of the three exceptions to a tax deed. And it is undisputed in this case that the taxes were not paid at all. And no one even tried to pay them on parcel C. Why? Because of a misunderstanding, and they bear that risk under Labels versus Cleese.
So CBJ paid $15,000 for a property that was worth at least $50,000. Doesn't that at least raise the question?
No, it's an auction. It's an auction. Auctions are unlike any other sale. We don't get into, was it fair, was it this or that. They have to come in a tax, you know, if they want to set aside a tax deed, which is what they're backdoor trying to do, you know, newsflash, that's what they're trying to do. They have to come in and show that there's an irregularity in that tax sale. They have to show, you know, most of the cases that are cited say we didn't, the summons wasn't done, the legal descriptions were wrong, the wrong parties were named. None of that has ever been alleged. We had a proper tax sale. My clients properly bid on it. So
would they be setting aside the tax sale if they just moved the boundary to account for the house?
Well, you know, that's interesting because that's what they're asking for. They're asking for a judicial boundary line adjustment. And I do a lot of real estate work. And I've looked at the state statutes and the municipal statutes and the county statutes on boundary line adjustments. And you know what isn't ever mentioned? Superior court judges or appellate court judges. That is something that is that happens at a municipal level. That is a governmental legislative action. It is not a judicial action. And that's why I'm saying we own what we own. They own what they own. They want what we own. I get it.
What's going to happen with the house?
Well, you know, a lot of things could happen. Parties could be reasonable. They could negotiate. They could do things. But, you know, for instance, let's say I'm a big developer and there's a guy out there with a couple of cows out there and I want his land. And I say it would be economically smart for you to give me your land and I'd give you a bunch of money. And they say, no, I don't want you to have my land. You can't go to court to force that.
Quite that simple, is it? I mean, the thing is that I think you said that you're willing to accept for purposes of this motion that they paid taxes on the house.
Well, but understand.
And we have, this is 12B6. I mean, there's a lot of cases that are being thrown around here as authority for this or that, but how many of them are 12B6 cases?
Well, not too many, but no one, No one really tried it this way. Now, there is a case, and it is the Morrison versus Berlin case, I think it is. And it's an older case, but that case, where there was a tax sale, and it's the one that mentions the east 110 feet. And there was a motion to throw out the case with regards, for failing to state a claim as it related to the north 310 feet. And the Supreme Court of Washington said, as to the second objection, we can think there can be no question that a cause of action is stated in the complaint for the recovery of a portion of the lot not included in the east 110 feet. Well, the east 110 feet had been lost by a tax sale. So they said, you cannot even state a claim for that east 110 feet. I mean, tax deeds are different than all other deeds. It goes back to the sovereign. It's like Grover Cleveland came out of the grave with the federal land patent and gave you a fresh new title to that property. It destroys, as you said, every other title. So why would we be reforming a deed of trust that is destroyed? There's no authority that says you can nunk-pro-tunk do this.
If the complaint is one for quiet title, and if they paid taxes on part of the property, namely the house and the land under it, is it your position that because they allege that they're entitled to the entire parcel, that this can't go forward? Or doesn't it make more sense to say, well, they allege perhaps more than they'll ultimately be proved entitled to, but they can still go forward and you can make that argument?
I don't think they can. And I do take issue with the notion that they pay tax on the house. This is a real estate tax. Real estate is figured on the land and the property.
You take issue with it, but this is 12B6. You want us to decide that as a matter of law, that they actually didn't pay any taxes?
The statute is a matter of law. The statute says that you pay tax on the land and the improvements thereon. And there is part of the house on this property, but if you have a problem with the taxation, you go and you appeal it through the county tax. They never did that. That part is now precluded. They cannot collaterally attack a tax. So, yes, I would say that they cannot move forward at all in this case. And that's what the court found. The statute of limitations is important in this case because what the cases find, and it's a bit convoluted, I would tell you, but what they consistently say.
Glad to hear you say that.
Well, look at two things when you look at it. Look at who's the plaintiff and who's the defendant. Because you can't use statutes of limitations as a sword. You can use it as a spear or as a shield. We're using it as a shield here. We're the defendant. They're bringing this. The second thing that they all say, and even though in later cases they have some dicta that goes off, the clear holding in these cases is that the statute of limitations does not run if the original owner is in possession. It is undisputed in this case that the original owner, which is Shelby, not the bank, is not in possession. It's also, they have no standing to do this.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Your Honors.
You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. I ended by talking about the Smith versus Henley case, and the reason that that's important is that it addresses some of the questions that the court has asked counsel, and that is the tax deed unassailable? And that's certainly an argument that they make. And what the Smith versus Henley case, which is a Supreme Court case, says, the facts are very similar. In that case, the east half of the property, well, one property owned east and west, sold the east half, kept the west half, but they were mistaken as to where the boundary line was located. The purchaser of the west half built the house the purchaser of the east half actually built the house on the west half. And later, there was a tax sale of the west half. The purchaser at the tax foreclosure sale had a survey done, and then for the first time, everybody recognized that indeed the house was located on the west half. And so it's factually very similar to this case.
Was it a quiet title action?
Yes. It was a, cancel the deed. It was a quiet title action by the buyer of the west half, excuse me. So the person who purchased via the tax deed brought a quiet title action to quiet title. And the owner of the east half and the house defended, and the court held that And of course, the owner of the tax deed made the very same arguments that tax deeds are unassailable under RCW 84.64180. And the court pointed out the glaring exception in that statute, which is that except in cases where the taxes have been paid. And in that case, very similar, the party who bought the east half paid the taxes on the house.
How do you respond to the argument that, no, you didn't pay the taxes on the house, you just overpaid your own taxes?
Okay, so as I'm sure you know, just from owning houses, the way the assessor does this is the property is valued based upon the land and the improvements. And we also know that the vast majority, in most cases, of the value is in the improvements. And so the tax is set based upon both the value and the improvements, so the land and the improvements. And so this particular property clearly was taxed as having Parcel B and the entire house, all of the improvements. And so the taxes were greatly larger than they were on Parcel C, which was taxed as a vacant land.
Do you make an allegation about the taxes paid in the complaint?
Remotely. I mean, it is not directly stated that way, Your Honor. But I believe the allegation, then I can grab it. But I believe if you read the complaint, there are provisions in it that indicate that that is obviously what our position is. And under 12b-6, the court may consider facts that are not specifically pleaded but are arguably or potentially arise out of the facts alleged in the complaint.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
All right. We are going to take a very brief recess, and then we'll resume with case number 5 after the recess.